Here we are in the Congressional Corner with one of my favorite people, Peter Welch, the only congressman from Vermont. Peter, we just had a thing with the Supreme Court. I'm fascinated by what's going on because all of a sudden I see John Roberts, an unlikely candidate for sainthood, seeming to want to keep the court in proper territory. What's going on, do you think?
Well, it's pretty dangerous to our democracy if we have a court that is highly ideological and so far out of the political mainstream that it thwarts decisions that are made by the elected representatives. I mean, the way it's supposed to work is Congress passes legislation. They do it with the authority of having been elected by people. People retain the authority to throw us out if they don't like the legislation we're passing. But we saw in another era of our history, right around the Roosevelt time, where when Congress was passing legislation, say, to protect children from having to work, and the court had an extreme position that such a law would interfere with the right of a 10-year-old to contract his own or her own labor. I mean, that's absurd. And the court lost credibility. And, of course, it led to that court packing fight. But the court started to back off. We're seeing a repeat of that approach because essentially what's happened in the Trump administration is he's packed it with ideological extremists who've been approved by the Federalist Society, which was largely funded by the Koch brothers. And they had a specific goal, and that was to end any capacity of the government to regulate health and safety and other things that would interfere with the free hand of the Koch brothers in their coal industry. And secondly, they want to weaken governmental authority as much as possible. And there is a group of ideological conservatives that have now been put on the court by Trump that have tipped the balance. This has long-term and I think ominous implications. And I think what you're seeing with Justice Roberts is he has a sense about the authority of the court has to have some connection to being in touch with what the modern reality is among the people of our country, and does not see the power of the court as exclusively it's my way or the highway, because if they can put together five votes to thwart any action by the legislature, then that's that. So I think he's concerned about what is clearly a significant imbalance in ideological partisanship on the part of the court.
So what could the Congress do? They can obviously, let's say the Senate goes Democratic. You have a president who's Democratic. You have a House that's Democratic. And we've heard about so-called court packing or expansion of the court. That's one thing. Is there anything else they can do? Can they change some of the jurisdictional rules for the Supreme Court? What could they do? Have you thought about that?
Well, there are some things the court could do, or pardon me, the Congress could do and the president could do. And what, you know, we're hearing from Vice President Biden is that he wants to impanel a commission. And I don't think that's just a dodge. Because I think what he understands is that, yes, this court may be out of balance, but also we don't want to overplay the legislative hand or the executive hand and just have this become an ideological fight. So some of the things that a commission could look at is an 18-year term. You know, you'd have a justice would be given 18 years, which is a very substantial term. That justice could be renominated but would have to be reconfirmed. I think there's a lot of merit to that, because then you would have, I think, the likelihood that every president would be able to make appointments. And the president, obviously, is somebody who's been elected by popular vote and presumably reflects the majority point of view. So that's an example of what something could be done. There's some other discussions about the jurisdictional authority that is delegated by Congress to the court in many respects. So that right. could be reviewed. And then obviously there's a lot of people talking about adding to the court, which I think is a very big political decision. And I don't think there's a consensus that would necessarily solve the problem as opposed to create more problems.
It might well. I know that you've been very concerned about prescription drug prices. Making any progress?
Well, we are. You know, and even Trump was, quote, supportive, but never got anything done. But the House has passed prescription drug price negotiation legislation. and it's just sitting in the Senate being ignored by Senator McConnell. But you've got a significant majority in the House already that would move that bill. If we have a Democratic Senate, that bill will move out of the Senate. It'll get on President Biden's desk, if he's president. I sure hope he is. And we would finally start standing up to the pharma industry. You know, we had a hearing the other day. Six executives, the six top paid executives in one of the companies, $115 million. And that's because they can price whatever they want. And they use that power so they can get whatever bonus they want. It's totally outrageous, and it's long overdue for the government to essentially be a counterweight to the pricing power of pharma.
And what exactly is in the bill?
It would give authority to Medicare to negotiate bulk price discounts when they're purchasing on behalf of the Medicare program. You know, we have price negotiation in the Medicaid program here in Vermont, and it was bipartisan. I mean, we had a big support, Republicans and Democrats, on that. We saved millions of dollars in the Medicare program. On Medicare, which is the biggest purchaser, is prohibited in law for the Medicare program to negotiate a bulk price discount. So it'd be like you going into CVS, let's say, and you want to buy 100 aspirin because the per unit cost when you're buying in bulk is less than if you just buy 10. Well, it's illegal under the Medicare program for the government that's buying massive quantities of these drugs to negotiate for a bulk price discount. And why? That's because pharma got that in the bill when Congress added, before I was there, the prescription drug benefit in the Medicare program. It's just an incredible ripoff. We're the only country where we essentially have legislation that stops what would normally be a free market concept of buyer and seller negotiating a price.
How can those guys look in the Senate, look in the mirror? I mean, how can they look in the mirror?
Well, the mirrors they're looking in are gilded in gold at the expense of taxpayers and Medicare recipients.
Let's talk about the Green New Deal. I know that environmentalists have been huge supporters of yours. I know Biden says that he's not for the Green New Deal. Can you explain what it is and whether or not we're going to see some real change here? Because if we don't, the world's coming to an end.
And here's what the Green New Deal means to me. It means we are going to have a very ambitious and very comprehensive effort to finally aggressively address climate change issues. The Green New Deal says to me that we are going to embrace the economic opportunity that comes with addressing climate issues, and not put our head in the sand and think the problems will go away or that we'll get a stronger versus weaker economy if we continue to ignore it. So Green New Deal is ambitious. That's what it says. And it's going to require that we do things all around our economy, everything from strengthening the grid to promoting renewable energy to electrification of our transportation system, to energy efficiency. And energy efficiency is something that's done locally, you know, home by home, building by building, and creates really good jobs locally. So there's so much that's there that can be done, and that in the doing of it, we create positive economic activity and good jobs. That's what the Green New Deal is about. And by the way, we can also start addressing some of the dislocation in coal country. You know, coal has declined, despite the president, and those are good people that have been in those coal mines. And we've got to be there with them as market forces and other things have changed. So part of the Green New Deal for me and the addressing of climate change is that, hey, the folks who've kept the lights on, we've got to be there with them as we make this transition.
I only have a couple of more minutes here, if that. I wanted to ask you about the Affordable Care Act. Assuming that Justice Barrett comes on, she votes against it, and they throw out what we know as Obamacare, what do you intend to do?
We can't lose the Affordable Care Act. We've got to strengthen and improve it. And President Biden, I'm hoping President Biden he's going to have a strong public option, and that is really essential. You know, I support single payer, and we may get there, but if we at minimum have the public option that many of us supported when we were passing Obamacare, that would be a huge step. The other focus has to be on lowering the cost of health care and start with prescription drugs. I mean, we can't afford the prices that we're being charged for health care in this country. We have the highest prices by far with the least universal access. So the idea of throwing out the Affordable Care Act, where there's no replacement and there hasn't been a replacement ever, is totally irresponsible. But the burden on us that's essential is that we make access more available and more affordable.
It's always wonderful to have our pal Peter Welch with us. Peter, the only congressman from Vermont and a great guy. We are so pleased that you keep coming on and talking to us because you make so much sense. Thank you so much, Peter Welch.
Thank you, Alan. See you later.